Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Today, we're diving into a topic that might just revolutionize how you think about relationships, intimacy, and even your health. We're joined by Dr. Molly Maloof, a leading expert in health span extension and personalized medicine. She's developed a groundbreaking program that's transforming the way couples connect. Today, we'll be discussing how improving intimacy can also improve your health and extend your lifespan. You'll learn about the ADAMO method, a comprehensive intimacy program designed to optimize sexual and relationship function for long-term couples. Dr. Molly will share how to reignite love, intimacy, and passion, boosting not just your relationship, but your health and happiness too. Don't go anywhere. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a true trailblazer in the fields of health span extension and longevity medicine. With a deep focus on personalized medicine, digital health innovations, and biofeedback-assisted lifestyle interventions, she's redefining how we think about health and wellness. She's the author of The Spark Factor, the first biohacking book designed specifically for women. As the founder and CEO of ADAMO Bioscience, she has brought modern science-backed sex education to couples with an innovative program aimed at enhancing sexual and relational health. Working alongside top experts in medicine, psychology, and somatic sexuality, she's developed a comprehensive and enjoyable approach to intimacy for adults. Her method can bring remarkable improvements in sexual satisfaction, communication, and intimacy. Welcome to the show, Dr. Molly Maloof.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. Let's just dive right in. First, share with us, what is the ADAMO method and what health benefits have you seen from couples using it?
Well, I think a lot of people listening today can remember the name Masters and Johnson. And these individuals were profound, groundbreaking scientists and physicians who basically were studying sexuality in the 60s. And there's even a show on Netflix called Masters of Sex. Now, currently, the gold standard of sex therapy in modern sexual medicine today is still sensate therapy, which was invented by Masters and Johnson. But as it turns out, sensate therapy was fundamentally about mindfulness-based sensual touch. Really, it took sex off the table for a month. You focused on connecting with your partner in other ways. And frankly, it's very effective in certain forms of sexual dysfunction. It's great for increasing desire. However, Masters and Johnson really fundamentally believed that sex could not be taught. They thought it was a natural function that everyone just kind of knew how to do. Our company actually disagrees. We believe that people should learn about sex and they should learn how to have painless, pleasurable sex that actually helps improve orgasm and connection between partners. Right now, there's a huge pleasure gap between men and women, with only 68% of women having orgasms every time they have sex with a partner, and these are heterosexual women, whereas 95% of heterosexual men have an orgasm every time. Our method actually teaches how individuals can learn to connect with themselves and learn to connect with their partners physically and emotionally. And this leads to outcomes such as improved orgasm frequency, improved orgasm quality, improved sexual satisfaction, improved sexual communication, reduced sexual shame, improved sexual confidence. And also we measured markers of love. So there's this thing called the triangular theory of love, and it's measured by passion, intimacy, and attachment, and which is also known as commitment. And we chose committed couples in our study, so we didn't see major changes in commitment because these were already committed individuals. However, we saw increases in emotional closeness, which is a surrogate marker for love, and we also saw increases in passion and intimacy, which is essentially showing that in committed long-term couples, we can increase feelings of romantic love. And I believe love is one of the most healing forces of existence.
Yeah, so true. I know we hear so much about diet and nutrition playing a role in how long we live, but rarely is our relationship and intimacy placed in the lifespan extension category. Share with us, what role does sex have to do with living longer?
I'm sure that a lot of people out there know that there's a lot of relationships, a lot of long-term marriages are sexless, about 20%. And lack of sex is a huge driver of divorce. And divorce can be one of the largest stressors of your life. It can cause a lot of emotional pain. And sometimes that's obviously a good thing for people to get divorced because they're hurting each other emotionally. But I have to say that I think a lot of people overlook sex as an important facet of our well-being. One of the biggest problems is that a lot of women in particular are not having pleasurable sex. So they don't actually desire it as much because it's not enjoyable for them. And I actually blame a lot of this on where we're learning about sex, which is unfortunately, a lot of people are learning about sex through pornography, which is largely performative and not actually what great sex really looks like. It's really about people trying to perform on camera. That's not really what really great intimacy it looks like. We don't see that in movies. We don't see that in pornography. And so if you actually look at longevity, one of the biggest drivers of longevity and happiness long-term is close, personal, healthy relationships. In fact, this Harvard study of men, it was like an 80-year study, showed that close personal relationships are the greatest driver of happiness long-term. Now, it turns out that healthy relationships have a massive survival advantage because if you feel safe with a person, if you're connected with a person, your body produces oxytocin. It also is the hormone that's produced during orgasm. And oxytocin is a natural anti-inflammatory antioxidant. It protects your mitochondria, which are the batteries of your cells, and it protects your heart. But when people are feeling lonely, and you can be lonely in a close relationship, just so you know. There's two different types of loneliness. There's objective and subjective social isolation. If you feel lonely, loneliness is worse for your health or as bad for your health as smoking, drinking, sedentary behavior, and obesity. And we just started learning about the role of human connection and longevity and healthy lives. I really think that human connection is fundamental for our happiness long-term. But a lot of people don't understand what human connection even is. I studied the work of Helen Fisher, who recently passed in the last month of cancer. And it's a huge tragedy because she was one of the advisors of our company. Her career completely transformed my perspective on medicine. She discovered that human love is consisting of three motivational drives. One is the sex drive that leads you to the romantic love drive, which is the drive to connect with a person. And basically it creates a physiological addiction to a person. And then the drive to attach creates this strong bond to a person. We evolved these motivational drives because they enhance our longevity and our happiness.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah, I got to thinking, you know, we talk about the blue zones and how you eat and what you have for diet helps you live longer. And I thought, well, the blue zones might be that, but the blue ball zones aren't healthy.
They're not. And the thing is like, I think a lot of people forget that, like, I'm dealing with this right now. A lot of women go through hormonal changes through their 40s and 50s. And we went through this entire belief system that the Women's Health Initiative had convinced a legion, a whole generation of doctors, that hormones cause cancer. New research is starting to demonstrate that hormones are actually vital for our longevity, important for our bone density, our brain function, and our libido. And I believe personally that, like, it's not like we just have to prescribe a sex therapy to fix all of our problems. We have to look at sexuality from a holistic lens. You have to look at it from the biological standpoint, the psychological standpoint, the relational standpoint. But I personally believe that you can have great sex into your 70s, 80s, and 90s. And that's something that a lot of people aren't told. And I think it's because we believe that sex is supposed to get worse as we get older. But I know plenty of couples that are in their, you know, later years of their marriages that are having phenomenal sex lives, but they invest in their sexuality. They invest in learning about their partner. They invest in educating themselves about sex. And they look at sex similar to how we look at nutrition and fitness. It's an area that you can improve. It's an area that you can optimize. It's an area of our wellness, not just an area that we fix when it's broken.
Yeah, I've read that younger adults today are showing less interest in sex, which has led to a decline in birth rates. I'll tell you, when I was in my 20s, the only day I didn't think about sex was February 30th. Why do you think sexual intimacy seems to be less of a priority for the younger generation? Is it the electronics, the TikTok, the video, social media? What's pulling couples apart when they're young?
I think it's very much, I really like to approach problems from the biopsychosocial model. So it's not just about our environment. It's not just about our bodies. It's not just about our inputs. It's a whole picture comes together. But I'll be entirely honest with you. I just spent a month studying the toxins in our environment, the microplastics in our food, the chemicals we're putting all over our bodies, the things in our water and our air. We have endocrine disruptors all over us, and we are ignoring this. This is changing our physiology. It's changing our bodies. And I do think it's affecting our sex drives, and I do think it's affecting our hormones. But I also think that our phones have created a dopaminergic addiction system that's similar to a slot machine. And unfortunately, one of the biggest drivers of romantic love and of sexual pleasure is dopamine. So if we are constantly getting stimulated with dopamine through our phones and through TV and through all of these inputs, I think there's a lot less of a motivation to actually seek it through. In relationships take time and effort and work. And there's also this swipe culture with apps. It's like, well, if I had one bad date with someone, that means that I should just go on to the next one. And I think people are forgetting the importance of investing in their relationships as a part of their health. it's fundamental to having a really great quality of life that you have a strong social network and a strong community and strong partnerships. And I just feel very strongly that we are not teaching young people and emphasizing this as an important part of our lives. And it's a really sad state of affairs.
You bring up a good point. I think of, you know, with swiping left, swiping right, you got so much access. Grass is always greener on the other side. One day didn't work out, I'll go to the next one. I'll give the guy a second chance. I mean, you're right. It's just like you're bombarded with it. But, you know, the grass may be greener on the other side, but it still needs to be mowed.
My sister said, you know, the grass is greener where you water it. Relationships take investment. They take time. You know, there's going to be rupture and repair. And you have to actually see them as kind of their own living organism. And that's the thing that I learned about when I studied mitochondrial health and I was starting to understand health on a first principles level. I realized that like human connection is literally something that either builds us up energetically or literally drains our energy. And so it is important to find people that you're compatible with, people that you feel safe with, people who make you feel loved, people who see you for who you are. And that's what makes a great relationship. And I think we should be educating young people more about how to invest in relationships and how to learn about their sexuality so that it's something that you can optimize and you can improve. Right now, I think a lot of people are kind of lost and confused. The Adamo method was invented because we saw an opportunity to educate humanity around sexuality. And as it turns out, like we do believe sex can be taught and we do think that people should learn embodied consent. And we do think that if you feel safe in a sexual context with a partner, that's going to lead to the best sex of your life. The problem is a lot of people don't feel safe sexually. A lot of women in particular, you know, if you look at some of these articles in the New York Times right now about young women being asphyxiated by partners, like it's actually a very dangerous state of affairs to be dating as a woman these days. I would say that I think our program can really teach people how to create safe sexual contexts and how to create more pleasure between partners, especially partners who've been together for many years.
Right. I know we had renowned sexologist Ava Cadell on the show, and she explained how stress can cause women to lose interest in intimacy, but men often seek sex as a way of stress relief. I'm curious, with your experience, how do you see stress affecting couples when it comes to intimacy?
There's a really great book called The Erotic Mind. And this book has been very game-changing for my understanding of what turns people on. Esther Perel also did a really great podcast with Huberman last week. And it was really about how our relationships with our parents and our relationships with our primary caregivers growing up actually influences our adult sexuality. Some people are actually turned on by stress and anxiety, and some people are turned off by it. It really depends on the individual. I'm one of the people who actually gets turned on by stress, and I'm a woman. So as it turns out that part of our program, the Adamo Method, teaches people to actually start to learn and understand their erotic individuation, their own self individually as an erotic being. Some people are going to be turned on by stress. And honestly, I think that if more people were having really, truly pleasurable, satisfying sex, they would want it to be a stress reliever more. But the problem is a lot of women have so many responsibilities at home, and 41% of women are primary breadwinners now. So they're not only working at home, they're not only working with children and being parents, but they're also primary breadwinners. So that puts a lot of stress and pressure on them. And I think a lot of women consider sex to be a lot of extra work. But when we teach the Adamo method, we teach people how to have sex differently than they were taught by what they've been learned through experience. And the way that we teach sex makes it a lot less effort and a lot more pleasure. And so we think that sex can be a great stress reliever if you learn how to do it right.
Yeah, makes sense. Talk to us about food. I know there's some that are touted as being aphrodisiacs, while some foods out there decrease sexual desire. What's your views on diet? Can it influence intimacy?
Well, so first of all, I don't know if you know this, I'm sure you do, but 88% of our country is metabolically unhealthy. That means that 88% of our country, the engine light is on in their cells. So they're not actually getting full benefit of the food that they eat because their cells are not functioning properly energetically. So I have found, and this is actually quite interesting, I'll get to the food conversation in a moment, but I wanted to frame it first with, have you heard that a lot of people are getting improvements in their sexuality when they're taking semaglutide and these GLP-1 medications? Part of that is because they're getting better insulin sensitivity and they're actually getting better blood sugar metabolism. And I spent a decade trying to understand the relationship between food and energy and the body. And I discovered that a healthy body is fundamentally a body that metabolizes food properly. So fundamentally, you have to have a healthy blood sugar, which means that if you're eating large amounts of sugar, large amounts of fried foods, large amounts of fast foods, large amounts of refined carbohydrates, you're going to damage your metabolism on a cellular level. And those processed foods, fast foods, Western foods, those are not going to give you a better sex life. But if you consume things like oysters, those are filled with zinc, or Brazil nuts, those are filled with selenium, those are going to amplify your natural hormone production. And that's going to improve your capacity to produce testosterone, which is fundamental for our libido. On top of that, I love certain adaptogens like Damiana as a tool. And I also even use this really fun product from my friend's company, Superfeast. It's an Australian company. And they actually make this thing called Deer Antler Velvet. It's a supplement. And it's my favorite libido enhancer. I'm telling you, it works. It's fantastic. It's kind of expensive, but it actually is derived from the Deer Antler Velvet, which does have natural androgens in it.
How about the one that's called Horny Goat Wheat?
I haven't found it to improve my libido, but I do love maca in particular for women. Maca really help women with hormone balancing. So really the truth is that like you've got to test and try these things out. Some men really swear by pine pollen, for example.
Right. You mentioned metabolic health and you talk about its relation to sex and intimacy. Share how those two combine. You know, why are they important to address together?
Yes. You know, as I mentioned earlier, when you're thinking about health, you have to think about first principles. I got my career started in Silicon Valley and first principles thinking highly informed my perspectives around health. I got really obsessed with mitochondrial health because our mitochondria are not just the powerhouses of our cells. They are sensing and integrating our environment, and they are actually helping to transduce hormone signals to determine where our energy goes. So they will be told by our inputs from what we're experiencing in the outside world, whether we feel safe or whether we feel threat. And when your cells feel threatened consistently, they shift from peacetime metabolism to wartime metabolism. They start shifting hormone precursors to the production of cortisol, norepinephrine, and epinephrine, which are stress hormones, away from sex hormones. So I've seen people who are under chronic threat and stress, and they see their sex hormones are all sorts of imbalanced. So you have to understand that mitochondria are little mini supercomputers in every cell that are trying to direct how you spend your energy and whether or not you have enough energy for reproduction or if you need to focus on survival. And if you understand this, you'll understand why certain people under hugely threatened and stressful states might put themselves in a position where they say, you know what? I'm not really turned on right now. I need to focus on grounding and regulating.
Right. Makes sense. What about female listeners? I hear this a lot from menopause, sex after menopause. It just stops. The battery dies. Is there anything you recommend that can help reignite the spark? Bioidentical hormones, herbal remedies? What do you recommend? What's out there that works?
Well, I'll tell you right now that we are going to enter a golden era of women's hormones in the next decade. There are so many interventions and innovations coming from women, and there's a huge amount of investment going into women's health. So I am extraordinarily excited for women because we have been told, because of the Women's Health Initiative, that hormones cause cancer. Unfortunately, the hormones that they used in this study were not the same bioidentical hormones to the ones that our bodies make. They were made from horse urine. They were different types of hormones that were not easily recognized or metabolized by the body properly. And this is why a lot of doctors like me believe that the Women's Health Initiative is not a reliable study for dictating how we actually replace hormones. So what I'm finding, and I'm speaking to many different doctors across the country right now on how to address midlife libido shifts. And first and foremost, I like to measure things before I replace. So I like to look at women's levels of ovarian reserve. I like to look at their inhibin B, their FSH, their AMH levels, their estradiol levels, their testosterone levels, their cortisol levels, DHEA levels, pregnenolone, and progesterone levels. Most doctors are not looking at these, unfortunately, and they're not really getting a full picture of a woman's changes throughout their life. In early perimenopause, a woman's going to notice that her progesterone levels are declining. This gives her a perspective of feeling like she has estrogen dominance that can cause mood swings, breast tenderness, bloating before periods. And frankly, just adding a little bit of progesterone before a woman's period can really boost a woman's mood and make her sleep better and have her get a better libido and feel less overwhelmed. Now, in late perimenopause, a woman is starting to notice that her estrogen levels are declining as her ovarian reserve declines. You start seeing her FSH levels rise and her inhibin B levels drop and her AMH levels drop as well as her estrogen levels. That's when I like to start estrogen replacement for these women. So what we do is we start on the lowest dose possible. And this is not the same as birth control because birth control is adding hormones to a body that's already producing hormones in a fertile period. That's actually increasing the amount of hormones in a woman's body. And there is a slightly increased risk of breast cancer in women with birth control. However, it's thought now that actual hormone replacement for women that are going through perimenopause and menopause might actually be protective against certain cancers. And again, it's personalized to the individual. A woman with a BRCA mutation, a woman with a high risk of ovarian cancer is a totally different woman with different needs than a woman who has a high risk of dementia or heart disease. In my case, my family history is higher for dementia. So I'm going to be using hormones when I need them because I want to protect my brain. A lot of women forget that they also have bone density loss throughout their 40s and 50s. So you do have to make sure you're lifting heavy weights, you're eating proper amounts of protein, and that's going to help boost your testosterone naturally. But testosterone replacement is not currently considered mainstream medical guidance right now because I actually spoke to a doctor who ran a clinical study on trying to get testosterone approved. They didn't see a big enough shift in outcomes to make it an FDA-approved product, but I have seen women improve on transdermal compounded testosterone. Unfortunately, this is still not considered mainstream medicine, but I think it will be in the next decade. Right now, there's actually quite a lot of companies that are coming out with home hormone testing. So as a woman's going through perimenopause and menopause, they can actually see their hormones shifting throughout the month. And I think we're going to be entering an era of personalized hormone replacement in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, you bring up next 5 to 10 years. I know digital health technologies is really growing in the healthcare area. How do you foresee their impact on personalized medicine and maybe wellness programs like the Adamo Bioscience offerings?
Well, you know, there's companies like Hone Health, Joy, Maximus, Alloy, and there's a lot of these companies popping up online that are making it possible for direct-to-consumer access to hormones. I do think that if you want a personalized approach, you do need to find a doctor who knows how to prescribe hormones. And usually that doctor is going to be a functional doctor, a naturopathic doctor, or even a mainstream doctor who just has had education on menopause and perimenopause. Unfortunately, there's not enough of these great doctors, but there's websites like The Pause Life or The Menopause where you can start educating yourself about this change. And it doesn't have to be so painful. In fact, one of the things that I forgot to mention in the previous discussion was vaginal estrogen. For all the women out there that are still nervous about estrogen and breast cancer, vaginal estrogen is one of the safest things you can do because it's localized to the body part that is most likely to affect your sex life, which is the thinning of the vaginal tissues. When this starts to happen, you can end up with things like lichen planus, you can have sexual pain, you can have real problems, as well as chronic UTIs can become an issue. And so I do recommend that any woman who's experiencing changes of their vaginal tissues to consider vaginal estrogen in order to improve her sex life and just her well-being.
Wow, a lot of great options. What about sexual health and communication? Sometimes that's the issue. They really go hand in hand. What advice do you have for couples struggling with sexual communication and how does the Adamo method help improve that?
We measured sexual communication in our study on purpose because we really wanted to see, does this actually change the way that humans communicate around sex? Speaking from experience, when I was 30 years old, a decade ago, I found it very difficult to talk to men about sex. I was extremely ashamed and I was raised very Christian. I had a very strong religious upbringing. So anytime I even thought about sex or talked about sex, I got really uncomfortable and really fearful. It took me a long time to get over this. And I think there's still a lot of women who find it difficult to have conversations around sex with their partners. In fact, a lot of men feel very emasculated if a woman complains about maybe their sex life is not satisfying. And as it turns out in clinical research, global studies have showed that 50% of the world's population is dissatisfied with their sex life. We wanted to invent a program that specifically addressed sexual communication because we know that talking about sex is the first step to making changes. How can you make a change about something if you don't actually know what's wrong? And if you can learn to talk about sex with your partner, you can open up all sorts of possibilities of what sex can look and be like.
Right. Good point. I'm curious about alcohol. I know it affects the sexes differently, men and women. Some it helps, you know, get them in the mood, but maybe too much and now they lose interest. What have you found? What's your opinion on that? The wine, should they do one glass, no glass, or just go for it?
To be entirely honest, I do understand that a lot of people are still nervous around sex and wine can be a great lubrication, of course, for your mind. And the mind is actually the biggest erogenous zone. But I will be entirely honest. I think for people who are in the dating years and that are still out in the world where they're dating, alcohol is, it actually puts a lot of risk into women's lives because alcohol is highly, it's a big risk for sexual assault and sexual trauma. I spoke to a woman last week who had, you know, a drug slipped into her drink. So I would say that if you're out in bars as a woman and you're dating and maybe you're on a date with a person, make sure to always have an eye on your drink and make sure to always, don't let men bring you drinks from a bar. You know, make sure that you're with them and you see the bartender make the drink in front of you. Now, for people who are in long-term relationships, I think a glass of wine can be a great way to get in the mood. But I would say that alcohol is a known carcinogen. So I don't personally recommend alcohol as a tool in the toolbox for improving sexual function. However, because I do know that it is a risk factor for cancer and especially hormone sensitive cancers like breast cancer. However, I'm not going to say if you want a glass of wine, you shouldn't have one. I think a beautiful glass of good wine is one of the best facets of being a human. So enjoy it if you like it.
You bring a good point, but alcohol brings your guard down. So if you got somebody new you don't know, that may not be a good idea. That's a good point. Let me ask this. In your groundbreaking book, The Spark Factor, you introduced biohacking specifically for women. I was wondering if you can share maybe some key biohacking strategies that are especially beneficial for women's health.
Oh my gosh. Number one, for all those women out there, I just spoke to a 23-year-old young woman yesterday, and she said, yeah, I don't track my period. I don't even know how. I think every woman at every age should start tracking her period. You should learn, what does it feel like to be in my follicular phase? What does it feel like to be in my ovulatory phase? What does it feel like to be in my luteal phase? What does it feel like to be in my menstrual phase? I think everyone knows what a menstrual phase feels like, but even just tracking your periods, is it heavy? Is it dark red? Is it clots? Is it light? Is it irregular? Is it regular? Women are so out of touch with their hormones because they don't track them. We are now in a really exciting time where you can wear an Oura ring and you can track your fertility with an app. I use the app Clue to track my periods. I can see that my periods went from 28 days to 27 days. They went from 5 days to 4 days. I can tell that my hormones are changing. I'm 40 now. This is happening. And I think that women who pay attention to their bodies and understand their cycles will be better prepared for when things start to change. And that's what I want women to understand, is that you can optimize your life by knowing your hormone cycles. You can optimize your nutrition. During my follicular phase, I eat more carbs. I exercise harder in the gym. I do longer hikes. I push myself. I lift heavier weights. Then when I'm ovulating, for example, I'm doing a photo shoot next week. I know I'm going to be ovulating. I'm using that time because I want to put my best face forward. You tend to be the most attractive during your ovulatory phase. That's a great time to be pitching business ideas or, you know, doing things like photo shoots or content if you're a content creator like me. Then there's a luteal phase. During my luteal phase, I like to be really careful with my carbs because I know I'm not going to be as insulin sensitive because my estrogen levels are declining. I'm also going to be gentler with myself because I'm going to be a little bit more emotional. So I'm not going to push myself as hard in the gym. I'm going to do a lot more long walks, more yoga. I'm going to do more reflection and less outward facing activities. And then during my menstrual cycle, I'm really paying attention to how I feel. During the beginning of my menstrual cycle, I'm going to take it easier in the gym. In the end of my menstrual cycle, I'm going to push it hard as I'm entering my follicular phase. Women can learn to understand their bodies and tune their lifestyle to their cycles. And as you start to change, as you start to go into your 40s, you can pay attention to how you feel, and that can help you prepare for if you need to do hormone replacement.
Good stuff. Time flew by. We got about like 2 or 3 minutes left. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the listeners we didn't cover today? Maybe some new stuff on the horizon that's exciting for new developments and research, maybe you foresee?
You know, I have been a huge proponent of blood sugar monitoring, including continuous blood sugar monitoring, since 2014. I was one of the first doctors to put these on healthy people, and I believe that metabolic health is fundamental to living a long and healthy life. So if you take care of your mitochondria and your blood sugar, so many of things in your body will improve. Your skin will improve. You'll have fewer wrinkles. You'll have better metabolism. You'll have better liver health. You'll have better brain health. You can decrease your brain fog. So my book, The Spark Factor, is really dedicated to helping you fix insulin resistance, to helping you strategize how to build metabolic flexibility. There's a great book by Christopher Palmer called Brain Energy. And his book is essentially similar to mine. It basically explains that you need to have proper metabolic health for proper mental health. I believe that the future of medicine is about fundamentally three pillars. The first is, and it's all based on energy. The first pillar is your energy metabolism. You have to master that in order to live a long and healthy life because you need enough batteries in your cells. Then it's human connection. This is the direction of your energy. This is the connection of your energy. You need to connect with others. You need to be able to connect it to yourself to have a thriving life. And the third one is energy direction. You have to have meaning and purpose. You have to have a reason for being. And usually that's related to our family, our friends, and our work. So if you can optimize these three facets of your health span, you can live a flourishing and a life filled with vitality.
Fantastic. Great information. Boy, you're just great with the sound bites. Listeners probably took a lot of good notes. And I want to thank you for joining us, sharing such enlightening information. To learn more, you can go to livingadamo.com and check out all their informative articles and the research that they share. And be sure to sign up for their online program. You can follow Dr. Molly on Instagram at drmolly.co and at livingadamo. And you can follow me on Instagram at Dr. D. Friedman. If you heard something today that somebody you know needs to hear, send them a link to this podcast. It's available to yourgoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com. And peruse our podcast library and share these segments with friends and family, coworkers, and on social media. You know, people get all these great tidbits and they keep it to themselves. I always say sharing is caring. Get this info out there. And you can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. More to come. Stay tuned and stay intimate with passion, love, and vigor.